This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. It's good to have you listening today. The story of Dennis Munson Jr. was one of those news stories that many of us probably noticed briefly and then forgot about. A young kickboxer from Milwaukee who died only hours after his first official match.
Munson's death was seen as a tragedy, but casual observers were probably left with the impression that it was an unfortunate result of a violent sport.
But an exhaustive investigation by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has revealed more troubling details about what took place in March. Reporter John Diedrich joins us this morning to give us some more insight. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Mitch. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with where this story starts. Who was Dennis Munson and what brought him to the Eagles Club ballroom on that fateful night?
Well, Dennis Munson Jr. grew up on the northwest side of Milwaukee. He and his identical twin, Derek, grew in, up in a working class neighborhood. Protective mother, but very loving family that really kept an eye on him. And he really was able to avoid a lot of the pitfalls that have befallen so many young men in this community, and was doing all the things, by all accounts, the right way. He was a big fan of fights, of kickboxing, of the UFC, mixed martial arts, from when he was young, and always had this dream of coming and getting into mixed martial arts. In his case, it was kickboxing. And that's where he pursued his dream at a gym on the west side of Milwaukee called Rufus Sport.
And so what brought him to the Eagles Club, this was his first real fight, right?
That's right. This was his debut, amateur debut at the Eagles Club. By way of background, the Eagles Club 1920s era facility on West Wisconsin Avenue has hosted boxing matches to way back to when they were founded and still are doing so today. So he was on the fight card that night, one of the early bouts. So if you can kind of picture the place, for those who maybe haven't been there, it's cavernous, it's big. But you have the pulsing music, the lights, and so forth. But really, you know, it's early on in the fight card. It's amateur.
But for him, this was the big time for him.
And it is. And for the fighters that I spoke to, this is a big moment for them. When they first step into the ring, they've gone through, at that point, at least a 6 or 8 week team building exercise. It's called the fight team, and they're in fight camp at that point, and they're straining and learning all the techniques. And, you know, in his case, he only started sparring for real about 2 months before this fight. But accurately, yeah, as soon as he gets in the ring, this is the big moment for all these fighters, including Dennis that night.
And who is his support team?
Okay, so behind him is Rufus Sport. Rufus Sport, by way of background, they're one of the most well-known gyms in the country, owned by Duke Rufus, who was a world kickboxing champion back in the 90s. In his corner is Scott Cushman, veteran striking coach at Rufus Sport, Joe Nichols, who is his day-to-day coach on the kickboxing team. And then also in the ring that night is Al Wiggers, referee, very experienced, almost 4 decades of experience, and then ringside, Dr. Carlos Feliciano.
And his opponent that night?
Michael Vang, also a newcomer, amateur fighter, making his debut as well, from fighting with a gym out of Appleton.
And the fight is 3 rounds of 2 minutes each.
That's right. It's bantamweight. That's 135 pounds. So it starts off, you have two minutes, and then in between there's about a minute or so of rest, and then you come out for the rest of the bout.
And this is really not that long a time frame we're talking about here. The whole episode takes place in the span of about 10 minutes' time, and Dennis Munson gets off to a pretty good start in this fight.
That's right. He comes out very strong, and that's a hallmark of Rufus Sport fighters, and fighters not just from this gym but others, to start strong and see if you can win early on. And he does. He comes out. He's raw. The experts who have viewed this video have noted that there's a rawness to him and his opponent as well. But he clearly has the upper hand in the beginning of that first round and in fact, wins the first round.
Well, and then so when do things start to go wrong?
Well, at the beginning of the second round, and we talked a little bit about that, there is video of this fight that experts have viewed for us. Veteran ringside physician friends and other officials, they note a change in him coming out in that second round. Oh, they call it a gait disturbance, that his legs are not underneath him. You start seeing the feet crossing, which is a real red flag for those looking out for safety. So it's at the beginning of the second round, but really toward the end of the second round and especially into the third round, it becomes clear that he's in deep distress.
And as we look at this video, and we'll have a link to the video from our website, there are, as you say, a number of indications that all is not right with him. But at no point do we really see anybody visibly express any concern for him.
No, it does look as though the things are going on as normally they would during a fight.
His corner people are propping him up.
That's right. Especially between rounds two and three, his corner man Scott Cushman is propping him up. He's having difficulty keeping upright on the stool, and then when he comes out for that third round, he nearly goes down, and his corner man catches him. The doctor is looking at him at times, but also is looking at his cell phone, and the experts keyed in on that as he was missing key action that was going on at the time. And the referee appeared to be watching all of this, but did not step in. One of the things he could have done is had a standing eight count in which he just stops the action to assess how he's doing, ask him questions, see how he responds. Same thing with the doctor, to do a medical timeout and assess him, see what's going on with him. They did not do that.
And things progressed through the third round. At no point does Dennis Munson fall over during the bout.
He doesn't. And the folks who've looked at this video are just – he had a will of iron and, too tough for his own good is one of the phrases that was used by some of the experts that looked at it. He didn't go over, which is amazing. And part of that, I guess, might be attributable to his opponent, Michael Vang, not being as skilled and being able to knock him out. Though he had a will, Dennis did, to keep going. And it is remarkable to see. But he never does go down during the fight.
He does not go down during the fight. But in the few moments after the fight, he does go down. And here's where things start to get really confusing, because there is a videotape that the police reviewed of this event. And there's a period in that tape that is not present.
That is correct. There are two video accounts of the fight taken by the videographer working for Rufus Sport and the promoter that night. Both of those were turned over to police. The high-definition version is missing 32 seconds at a key moment. It's right before Dennis Munson Jr. collapses in the corner. And what's missing in the segment, and we can see it in the other video that is complete, is in that time, the corner man, Scott Cushman, is again pushing up Dennis Munson, slaps him in the face a couple times, and then is holding him up by the neck and the face. During this time, the doctor's not watching. He's looking at his cell phone. And on the version that's where the time is missing, it also jumps forward and he's on the ground. But we know from complete version that during that time, there were some key events happening.
And so he collapses, and even then, the doctor never comes up onto the ring to take a look at him. What takes place that gets Dennis Munson out of the Eagles Club that night?
Well, it's very interesting what transpires, and the experts who have looked at it were really struck by the fact that when he went down, the doctor never got it in the ring. The corner man stayed over him for about a minute, and then he was rolled out of the ring, which is contrary to protocol in many states and in Wisconsin, if this was a regulated bout. So he was rolled out of the ring and then brought to a seated position. The paramedics who were on scene wanted to give him oxygen. The doctor said no oxygen, just prop him up in a chair. His vitals begin to crash, and at that point the doctor says, okay, we need to get him out of here. But their exit from the Eagles Club is hampered by the fact that there's a manual elevator that has to be operated by a person. That person happens to be on a different floor at the time with no means of communication. So they're at this door, furiously banging on the door to try to get the elevator operator's attention. Meanwhile, Dennis Munson Jr.'s vitals are crashing.
How long is it between the time the bout ends and the time Dennis Munson gets to a hospital?
Well, using records, we've looked at medical records, paramedic records, police records, also looking at social media. We found that at least 30 minutes that passed between his collapse and getting to the hospital. I should note that the doctor sent him to Sinai, Aurora Sinai Medical Center, and that was at the direction of the doctor. That was contrary to EMS, Emergency Medical medical procedures in Milwaukee County. According to the EMS director, he should have been taken to Frederick because he had possibly suffered head trauma and had lost consciousness.
And by the time he arrives at the hospital, he is comatose and dies just a short time later.
Yeah, they work on him. And again, Sinai is not the place to take a patient. A post-resuscitative patient is not to be taken to Aurora. And they were somewhat challenged to try to figure out what was going on. And the family gathered. His brother was with him. He traveled with him. But the other family was scattered around town. And so they were really struggling to try to figure, this is the hospital staff, what was wrong with him. And really, why is he at this hospital? Because all trauma patients in Milwaukee County are to go to Frederick Hospital.
Who has the ultimate authority over a fight like this?
Well, there is no regulation of kickboxing in Wisconsin, so this was an unregulated fight. Interestingly, mixed martial arts is regulated in Wisconsin, and a little bit different than kickboxing. And for those who follow this, the Ultimate Fighting Championship is mixed martial arts. So that combines both striking and grappling on the ground. But kickboxing, when the state regulated mixed martial arts, they did not include kickboxing. So there were no state officials there, and some of the key components, while they did have some protections that are afforded under regulation, there were some things that were missing.
Well, do we know why the state has chosen not to regulate kickboxing?
Well, what's interesting is maybe why they regulate mixed martial arts. So that motivation was a desire to bring the UFC events to Wisconsin, and this has happened in other states as well. The Ultimate Fighting Championship will not come to a state if they don't have regulation, and it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, and one of these events, one of which we had in Wisconsin in 2013, can bring in $1 million easily. So there's a motivation in that way to get regulation passed. When the folks looked at kickboxing, one of the questions that they had was, well, if we allow this, if we regulate this, it is allowed legally, but if we regulate it, where is that going to stop? Are there going to be Taekwondo events that are going to children's tournaments? Are those going to need to be regulated? Those who I've spoken to have said, really, it's clear that these events are very similar to mixed martial arts events. A lot of the same striking and so forth is happening. So it naturally goes with MMA, but for now it's stayed on the sidelines.
At the same time, as you've mentioned a couple of times, there were protocols that were in place. Is it clear whether the protocols were just disregarded, or who is, you know, responsible if protocols are not followed?
Well, there really is no accountability or investigation. The state said they had no power to do an investigation because they don't regulate this. This despite the fact that the corner man, the doctor, and the referee are all licensed by the state to work MMA events. But because this was not an MMA event, they said they did not have the venue to investigate. But as you mentioned, there were a number of pieces, important pieces, that were in place. A ringside doctor who's a physician, and he has a degree in emergency medicine. His current position, he's the medical director at a testosterone center in Milwaukee. There was also a paramedic service there, private ambulance service. So they were on hand. And then you had the referee who's experienced in the corner man. But the question becomes, did they follow the protocol? Now, from their point of view, and I think it's important to take it back, is that they're from where they sat and what they told officials afterwards, he just appeared to be an exhausted fighter. He did not appear to be any different than fighters that they've seen hundreds of times who start strong and fade. And the experts who looked at this video for us conceded that that appeared to be the case. The really troubling thing for them was the change in him from the first to the second round, and that especially with an amateur, you want to get in there and figure out, because you have no track record on this individual. You don't know how he reacts to the big adrenaline dump at the beginning and the drop off later on. And as they looked at this, they said this was there was clear opportunities to step into the ring and make an assessment.
You mentioned Dennis Munson's brother was also at this fight and also very interested in kickboxing. Where is he at this point?
So Derek Munson, it's interesting, inseparable young men came up together, worked in the same place, shared an apartment into adulthood, and actually both had a similar interest in fights, although Derek pursued mixed martial arts, slightly different path. for those who know twins, sometimes they do like to take a slightly different path so they don't get lumped together, and that was the case with Derek. It's really, really been difficult for him. I've spoken to him very briefly a couple times, but it's really hard for him to talk about this at all and really find his way in this life because, you know, his partner in life, if you will, is gone. He at this point continues to train, but has no plans to fight. And, you know, for the family, that's a comfort at this point. But they still wonder, how did this happen? How did a seemingly, top fit, healthy person, which he was, die? And, could this have been prevented?
And the medical reports indicate that his cause of death was complications from head trauma. Is there any concern that the head trauma had occurred not just in this fight but in practicing leading up to the fight?
Well, that's certainly possible. And this gets to the secondary impact syndrome that we've heard so much about with the NFL. This is the phenomenon where a blow that's taken to the head earlier can be exacerbated by another blow later on. A couple things that are interesting, and that certainly is a possibility, and the tests are not sensitive enough to say it happened precisely that night, but it happened in the recent past, so it could have happened. What's interesting, though, is he trained for the most part with headgear on at Rufus Sport. He was not wearing headgear that night. These events that were sponsored by Rufus Sport in the 90s, they did wear headgear, and in some other states, amateurs do wear headgear. There was not headgear in this. And the other interesting point here is that weight cutting is a factor. And so for those who aren't familiar with this, this is the practice of cutting weight down to get into a lower weight class. The theory being that you're going to compete and be able to have an advantage. He didn't have a lot of weight to cut by all accounts, but it was difficult for him. Cut about 8 pounds, maybe closer to 10, somewhere in there. Not a big weight cut for veterans, but for somebody who was lean as he was, that was difficult. And it also raises the question of whether that put his brain in more jeopardy, because the dehydration can reduce the layer of protection, that cushion between the brain and the skull, and leave him more vulnerable.
Save for your own investigation, is there any indication that there are people who are looking at how this all went down so that it doesn't go down like this again?
Well, there are pieces of it that have been investigated. The police department looked into it, but again, they're looking for a crime that was committed. And since he consented to be in the ring, it appears as though there was no crime committed, at least in the opinion of the police department. And the district attorney in Milwaukee reviewed it, and he said he's not issuing any charges at this time. So he left the door open, but at this point, he no processed the case. The state, as I mentioned, is not investigating. They said they don't have any venue to do that, no way to investigate it. So they're not investigating it. And really, the only sliver that remains actively being investigated is the conduct of Curtis Ambulance. And they've said, as a private ambulance, that they followed everything, they did everything properly. But what we found was that instead of calling for the fire department and the paramedics, the more skilled paramedics that come with the fire department, right at the beginning when he collapsed, as they should have done, they waited 15 minutes, instead calling their own unit first. And this led to some confusion when they got outside as to who was going to take him where and so forth. So the county's director of emergency services is reviewing Curtis Ambulance's conduct in that. But that's really the only sliver that's being investigated.
In the end, it sounds like everything that could have gone wrong went wrong.
Well, that was the comment from veteran fight doctor Michael Schwartz. As he said, from A to Z, I can't tell you what was done right here. And for those who've looked at this and have worked from inside the sport to try to make it safer for 20 years, they're troubled by this. And this video is going to be used as a training tool at conferences and for other organizations around the country.
Well, John Diederich, it is a troubling story in many ways. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thanks, Mitch. I appreciate it.
John Diederich is a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. His investigative report on kickboxing in Wisconsin and the death of Milwaukee fighter Dennis Munson Jr. was in yesterday's print edition.
There's a link to it and the narrated video of the fight from WUWM.com/lakeeffect. We should note that the video in particular may be disturbing to some viewers.
We'll take a quick break now, but in just a moment, we'll learn about the work of NASA flight surgeon and UWM grad Jim Locke. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.